The psychedelic revolution is here. If you want to integrate your visionary experiences into your purpose, get clear on your entrepreneurial path, and help people while you do what you love, then this podcast is for you. Welcome to The Psychedelic Entrepreneur, Medicine for These Times. I'm your host, Beth Weinstein. I'm a spiritual business coach, three-time entrepreneur, and a lifelong student of psychedelics and sacred plant medicines. You carry your own unique medicine, and your medicine is what we need for these times. This podcast will help you to share your medicine so you can create transformation in the world. Listen in on conversations with psychedelic leaders, changemakers, and conscious entrepreneurs who are living proof that a better world is possible when you follow your heart and live in alignment with your soul. Hey everyone, welcome back to The Psychedelic Entrepreneur, Medicine for These Times. So today I'm here with our guest, Joelle Briere.
Briere, close enough.
Joelle Briere, I love it. My 11 years of taking French has proven to be useless. Joelle, so thank you so much for being with us. Joelle Briere is the founder and CEO of the psychedelic wellness companies Cavalia Collective and Tandava Retreats. Joelle has been a pioneer in the modern psychedelic movement, specifically in the realm of 5-MeO-DMT and the Bufo Ovarius Toad. His unique approach of applying classical non-dual yogic philosophy as geography for both preparation and integration from the entheogenic experience gained attention around the world at the first World Bufo Ovarius Congress and continues to shift the landscape of psychedelic use. Joelle works specifically in the retreat setting and with over a decade of experience has curated a container that is meant to facilitate lasting change. Drawing from a combination of Eastern as well as neurofeedback and other contemporary Western integrative practices, these retreats give participants a space to safely unfold, address trauma, undergo cathartic release, and have the support system to hold them through the whole process. With a heavy focus on integration and aftercare, participants are able to create lasting change and find deeper states of peace than they thought conceivable. Joelle and his team at Tandava are raising the bar for psychedelic and wellness retreats with a flagship center in
Tepoztlan
in Mexico. And he has a larger retreat center opening in 2022 in Costa Rica and group retreats in Jamaica. Retreats are led by top-notch teachers and facilitators with extensive experience, and safety is the number one priority, followed closely by a warm and welcoming container that is both nurturing and expansive. So, Joelle, you said some amazing keywords there in your intro. Expansion, safety, release, integration, preparation, and we're going to get into this. But the first question I always love to know, how did you get onto this path? You know, were you raised just spiritual and a yogi, or, you know, were you originally, you know, my big joke is, were you originally once a corporate attorney and then you had an awakening? You know, what's your career story?
Yeah. Thank you, Beth. So how I got on this path, you know, during the 90s, I was a card carrying psychonaut. And I was really into psychedelics and plant medicines back then. And yes, I did also have a fairly spiritual upbringing. You know, I was taught how to meditate when I was a kid. But at the same time, I grew up in Washington, D.C. in the 80s and 90s. And we were murder capital of the world until 94. And I was no stranger to all the drama and chaos that was happening there. So I put myself through all the knuckleheadedry, got into a lot of trouble in the 90s, and spent a long time putting myself back together. But, you know, I'd stepped away from all substances in the late 90s or early 2000s, and then, you know, found my healing path through yoga and meditation years later, and then was reintroduced to plant medicines by two of my teachers when living in the Virgin Islands. And that was around 2007, I believe. From there, kept kind of traveling around, got to study under some amazing medicine people, some amazing practitioners and teachers, and continued to learn. But, you know, and then somehow, lucky enough, my passion now became a big thing. And so, you know, as you know, the psychedelic space has turned into something substantial. So it's been just a great adventure kind of finding into the world of business and finding myself in this seat.
Yeah. It's interesting. I have actually a similar background, and I wonder if you've gone through some of the things I went through. So, I of course started with psychedelics at a very young age recreationally. I got into the whole rave and party scene. And we all know how that goes. It was like, it starts from MDMA, back then called ecstasy, and it turns into, cocaine and crystal meth, and I could go on and on. And then it becomes this path of destruction, and I'm just like you, where it turned around. I took a long break, actually, right after 9/11. I was living in New York City, and it was like just kind of this eye-opener where I just took a break for many years and found meditation, and I was already doing yoga. But I'm curious, what brought you to, let's say, the medicine of toad, Bufo alvarius, the 5-MeO-DMT, which, I love to go deep with this because I have a very interesting relationship with it. But what brought you into facilitating toad? Like, did you start with the stepping stones, psilocybin, ayahuasca, and so on? Or did you just go straight to toad?
So I first tried 5-MeO back about 20 years ago, back when you could legally order it on the internet. And back then, I didn't know the difference between NN-DMT and 5-MeO-DMT. And I remember we got some, and I wasn't ready for the experience. I don't even really remember the experience, nor do I even count it as my first experience. And then, years later, I found myself ceremonially serving NN-DMT. This was maybe starting around 7 or 8 years ago. And, was really enjoying that, except was feeling a little odd, out of our ceremonies. I always felt like it was just kind of rolling the dice. You never know where people are going to go. And I'd say maybe 2 out of every 10 participants would have a significant experience to where they were able to find healing. And then I was reintroduced to 5-MeO. And so I was lucky enough to sit with the Temple of Awakened Divinity and have my initiation through them. And it was that full classic mystical experience. And especially because my background was in yoga and yogic philosophy, I immediately recognized that experience as what the yogis would call nirvikalpa samadhi. And I had first had that experience actually living in India, living in an ashram without substance back around 2010, 2011. And it was quite familiar again this time. So at first I had no desire to serve it. It was such a big experience that it challenged my parts of self-worth. It challenged my self-confidence and my believing in myself. And so I developed a deep passion. I immediately became obsessed with it. And, one thing led to another. I ended up, I was going down to the jungle every year and studying with the Shipibo. I was down there training to serve ayahuasca. And then one ceremony night, I got a very, very distinct message. This is not your medicine to be serving. This is not your heritage. This is not your background. And, I saw that and it said, you know what medicine you are to be serving. And showed me 5, and I was very resistant. And, I was kind of shown that, because of the yogic background, the entire system of yoga is a map to that place. Therefore, I was already using it as a geography for preparation and integration with DMT and doing some talks in LA about it. But it just fit the 5-MeO model far better. But again, that challenged every part of me. So I was very resistant to it for a few months. And eventually, I ended up reaching out to a few people who were to become my mentors later, reaching out to kind of begin apprenticing, begin learning from them, begin seeing how this could happen. And it began to form into its own container. And applying the yogic geographies was really how I got started with this medicine. And, from then, it's just been a learning process of getting to learn from amazing people. I always say that, I'm here because I was standing on the backs of giants and got to learn from some really, really amazing people. Mm. And it's just been one of the most rewarding things I've ever experienced, watching people go through this full entheogenic process, this full mystical experience. While with NN-DMT, I really had no idea where they were going to go. But with 5-MeO-DMT, we know where they're going to go. It's much more of a realm that I understand. So we found a lot more effectiveness going like that. And that's how I ended up here.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. It's interesting because the previous interview I just had, I mentioned how, I was always on a pretty deep spiritual path myself and got into Buddhism, right? And it's, the yogic path and all the ancient wisdoms, all the ancient, I don't ever use the word religion, but, the ancient traditions, they all point to the same thing and it's all the same story. And the one thing and I had already been working with psychedelics since I was 14, it was not new to me. But the one experience I remember, it was this pivotal moment with ayahuasca where I was able to finally grasp these concepts I had been hearing about in Buddhism and in yoga and, you know, the Maya, the illusion, the nature of our being, the nature of reality. And it was so hard for the human mind to even grasp it. You know, especially my human mind is very visual. And I'm like, but I can't see it. I can't understand it. And then you access it and you're like, oh, okay, now I get it.
There's the gnosis.
yeah. And so it is actually, I love that you're, you know, bringing in these Eastern wisdoms and traditions to this, what we might call ancient yet relatively new medicine, which, so the first time I had worked with this medicine was almost 5 years ago and with Bufo. And I had a very, very, very big prayer. I actually did not really think that that medicine was meant for me. But at the same time, I had one thing I needed to, I was like so committed to breaking through and I wasn't getting there with anything else, right? You know, I had done all, done meditation retreats and Vipassana and so on. And so I had a huge prayer and, you know, and I thankfully, like you, I worked with a facilitator that has been trained very extensively for many, you know, she was one of the original like OGs out there serving this medicine around the world. And the experience I had, let's just say this, it, you know, we all know it's 5 to 10 minute, 15 minute max experience. It had rocked my world. The way I put it is it took me 6 months to integrate it. And then it took me probably another year and a half to 2 years to finally like come off of it. And it was interesting because I had been working with ayahuasca for a long time and working with, you know, psilocybin and other medicines and had very, very powerful experiences. But this tiny little dose of toad medicine, I don't know how to, I could never put it into words, right? And it was also the scariest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
And so I know people go through this because I've now been in a container. Last year I was in this kind of training slash program with 11 people with the same facilitator. And we actually got to hold space in a group. And I got to witness other people having the exact experience that I had, you know, 5 years ago. How, here's the one thing I've always wondered, and I've asked a few people this, how do you explain, if the human mind can even make explanation out of this, how do we explain what goes on in those really, you know, full release doses where I was died and came back to life? That's how I always describe it. I died, I cleared, I felt like I cleared huge amounts of like karma and, you know, who knows, past lives. But what, how do we explain this medicine?
It's, you know, that's the
such
tough
a mystery.
Thing. It is the ineffable. It is that which cannot be explained. It is beyond the mind. And that's why that experience itself can only be experienced when we go through a dissolution of the default mode network, a temporary shutdown. The mind has to get out of the way before we can experience that. And so, you know, to use yogic reference, the yogis say, Atman is Brahman. The individual soul is the same as totality or God or the universe, whatever word we want to use. This medicine is a real life experience of that. In Greece and Rome, they had the mystery schools of Ulysses, where they said you had to die before you die so you can experience your own immortality. And it is not that we become immortal as human beings, but more so experience that our innate nature is immortal by nature. You know, we are the exact same light photons that were present 14.6 billion years ago in the Big Bang. I may have gotten that number wrong, but who knows? But it is that undescribable great mystery that the mind cannot understand. And so when the mind begins to come back online, there's always going to be this attempt to compartmentalize it, this attempt to understand it. And we offer to our participants that we can't. It cannot be understood. It is beyond what the mind can conceive. More so, it's a simple state of allowance. We simply surrender to that great mystery. And then the integration is where we make it matter. Because unlike other medicines, we're not generally going through an adventure, through a journey to where we're saying, oh, this represents this, this means this, and I let go of this. It is much more of a undescribable catharsis that we go through. And that's why we feel that the integration process is so, so important. We use the frame of the hero's journey as reference, as a geography for our participants, which is my partner Victoria's area of study. And this allows us to provide a transcultural geography, you know, that is innate within the human experience for people that may not resonate with the yogic or Eastern concepts and things like that. We're really about meeting participants where they're at rather than drawing them into our own particular ideologies. But Joseph Campbell summed it up pretty well, you know, in this, we hear the call to adventure. There's usually a refusal to the call after we make the commitment, and we have to step out of the ordinary realm into the unknown. And that is as unknown of an unknown realm as it gets. But that essential trust, that essential faith, you know, that trusting that there is an awareness tending the light at the end of the tunnel, that we will be caught if we jump. You know, this when the mind is being dissolved away and it is thinking, if I go any farther, I'm never coming back. Or if I don't hold on for dear life, I'm going to die. The essential trust in letting go into that and allowing ourselves to die, that is the, you know, I feel that that is the true definition or the roots of where the concept of faith comes from. And after that is just the splendorous experience of the ineffable infinite.
Mm-hmm. Oh, beautifully said. Beautifully, beautifully said. Because, yeah, I remember when I, you know, I experienced that, you know, I was one of those people that had the really big release. I did not know. No one warned me, right? They actually said, don't watch any YouTube videos. Like, don't go asking. And my friends that had worked with it all just said, oh, it's so beautiful. You just see God. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I've been there before. But I also had a really pretty intense prayer. And I was like, you know, like, I'm here to do the work. And, but of course, when I came out of it, I was like, whoa, that was, you know, of course, that feeling of like, that was just incredible. But let me ask, like, you know, why? Because the one thing I've noticed over the last few years, it has grown in popularity exponentially. To the point where I didn't know that it was so popular until recently when I speak to a lot of people. And then I went to an event with a few hundred people and I could not believe the amount of people that not only served it, but had gone and worked with it and then more than once. And I was like, well, so I'm curious, why do people even seek this medicine? You know, I came to it as kind of almost a last resort medicine. Like I had known about it for years. I had friends that had worked with it. I had access to it, but I was like, no, until, you know, until I was like, you know, there's this one thing that I have done eons of therapy and like, no. And by the way, the prayer, it actually manifested a year later. Exactly. Like almost to the T. But I'm curious, like, why do people turn to this powerful medicine? And is it really for everyone? You know, like,
that's a good question.
Yeah.
That's a good question. Firstly, I will say, no, it's not for everyone. I'd say it's everyone's human birthright to have this experience. Is it for everyone right now at this moment? Most likely not. I'd say why people come seek it out varies. You know, years ago, our participants were generally seekers, spiritual seekers, people already in the plant medicine community, people who were on, you know, had worked with the various psychedelics and were looking for kind of that big experience, the next big thing. And then people coming from, especially people who would seek me out personally, a lot of people who, you know, had yogic practices for 30, 40 years and were into psychedelics in the 60s and 70s, but then, you know, took on a family life, took on the regular householder life, saw that plant medicines were being reapproached in a responsible way. You know, maybe they read Michael Pollan's book and, you know, saw that, hey, this is an experience of nirvikalpa samadhi. And why not? So for a while, that was our main type of seeker. Now, as plant medicines and psychedelics go more into the mainstream, we're seeing much more people who are genuinely suffering coming to us, people who are deeply hurting. And we've been taking quite a lot of cases of treatment-resistant depression. And many of these people are people who have zero interest in the spirituality of it. In fact, many of them are people who are actually triggered by spiritual talk. And so, you know, again, our protocol is to meet participants where they're at, but also letting them know during the preparatory process that this experience is undeniably mystical. And so we take 2 weeks to prepare every participant we work with. We believe in a very thick, heavy preparation process after medical and psychological screening and intake, of course. But why it wouldn't be for everyone is because That experience is huge. It is a very big experience. And while a extensive psychedelic resume is not necessary, we work with plenty of people. We've worked with Olympic athletes who have never even smoked cannabis. What's not necessary is having done a lot of medicines, but what is necessary is a willingness to surrender, a willingness to allow. And so that's what we really look for. And not everyone is in a place to where they are ready to let go of everything they know and believe in. You know, the great Buddhist's quote applies here. If on your path to enlightenment, you encounter the great Buddha himself, cut him in two, kill him. Radical detachment of our own personal ideologies, because our spiritual practices and our stories and our techniques, they'll get us up the mountain. But to take that final dive into the infinite, we have to let go of it all, because not one spiritual practice or religion fully encapsulates the mystical, as it is beyond what minds can conceive. And so any type of spiritual lineage is subject to human dogma, is subject to us over-categorizing and compartmentalizing it, attempting to make structure. And again, structure is needed, but it's about finding that middle path. But, you know, it's an interesting one, trying to create structure within a boundless and ineffable experience. And so, you know, quite a few times, there's a lot of cases of people going into psychosis, people, you know, having trouble for months, even years, integrating this experience. And that's been our main push behind the Five platform, the education platform, is getting some structure and safety out there. Because just like you said, people are just like, oh yeah, it's like meeting God. It's super blissful. Not everyone goes to meet God. Not everyone's mind is ready to surrender in the here and now. And when it feels that dissolving away, it may fight it tooth and nail. And if we fight it and pull ourselves out of the experience, then that can cause PTSD, literally the same part of the brain that, you know, a combat trauma vet would, a combat vet with PTSD would undergo, you know, going into fight or flight. And so that's going to cause reactivations, whether day or night, that can be crippling to someone's daily life. So it's very important now that there's, you know, information on what the stuff really is, how powerful it is, and how it can be safely used. Because 5-MeO is getting a very bad reputation. A lot of people, most people serving it have no business serving it, are not offering it in a comprehensive container. Thus, people are getting harmed, people are getting injured, and practitioners are thinking they are the saviors of the world. So it's scary stuff to navigate.
A lot of ego. Yeah, exactly. And you said so many good points. And, you know, I look back to my first experience and I'm grateful that I had community. I had support. You know, the practitioner I worked with lives fairly local. I had, you know, other practices set up. I already had a somatic therapist, you know, so thank God. But yeah. I looked back at that, just the energy in my body that no one had told me about, you know, just because I tend to have a lot of energy to begin with. And I remember just feeling this like, you know what, actually, when I knew something was up, it was about 3 or 4 weeks later, my body started craving tobacco. And I don't Ooh. Work with tobacco. And when I do, it's very, very little. And it's usually down in the jungle and with prayer. Yeah, but yeah. I actually started craving the wanting of tobacco. And I was like, okay, wait, I think I'm a little ungrounded by this medicine. And what actually brought the final integration together, because I also had drank ayahuasca, you know, weeks later, and that was like a whole nother crazy experience. And then I went on a dieta, and, you know, it was a lot. And had I known how big the toad was, you know, maybe I would have made different choices. But The final integration was a Vipassana I was on, you know, about 6 months later, where I actually had this full Kundalini experience. It was like beyond reactivation. But everything did come out. But it was interesting because I have seen some people actually, you know, someone I know pretty close to me had a, you know, temporary, thank God it was only maybe a few weeks, but it was kind of like a psychotic break. And I've yep. seen that. And thankfully I was resourced enough to direct that person to get some professional help. But yes, I agree that it's kind of this wild west out there. You know, there's a lot of the media, there's a lot of the stories of like, oh, this is amazing. Everybody needs this. Oh, this will just, you know, cure everything. But yeah, I think, you know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, this education, because I know you have an education platform you're building, and what needs to be said? Cause yeah, it has been getting a mixed rap with some, you know, critiques of facilitators that have been very harmful or, you know, doing things in different styles. And I think some would agree with. But yeah, what's this platform you're building?
This platform we are building is to be a centralized hub of resources and information all on 5-MeO DMT. This is for anyone from potential participants who are considering taking this medicine to participants who have taken it and are having trouble integrating and it would like resources. You know, we're going to have links to integration specialists who are familiar with the 5-MeO process, accounts of what people's experiences have been like. This is going to be for practitioners who are already serving, who are in need of refinement, because out of all the trainings that are happening, I know of maybe three or four that are comprehensive and are proper trainings, and then about 20 off the top of my head that I can think of that are like a 6 to 7 day training by people who already don't know how to serve. And so, and I'm gonna try not to drop any names right now, but
I'm sure I know who they are too. I know some.
Yeah. And so essentially, you know, there is no indigenous lineage that we can look back to for this medicine. There is not one, you know, group that kind of has guided the way for a long time. This is a new medicine. But at the same time, I think that's what makes it very special is because not one group can say, this is the way you do it. You know, you have to look at it this way, you know, through this outlook. This medicine is forcing us all to put aside our individual beliefs and make it about the participant. And every participant is coming from a different place. We've all had our different traumas, our own different stories. We all have a different path to surrender. And so the 5 platform is going to also be helping guide practitioners towards creating the container that is geared around the participant rather than geared around making themselves a, you know, a shaman rock star and things like that, which is what we see all too often. So, yeah, we'll have our practitioner training on there that we will be offering through there, which will be a year-long, very comprehensive course with hands-on experience as well as online. We're also offering a practitioner refinement course, which we're getting a lot of responses to right now, and we'll probably be launching in about 2 months. And this is going to be a 3-month course for participants who are or practitioners who have, you know, some have been serving for years but are still not abiding by safe practices because it's not how they were taught. We have people serving giant groups of people. There's, you know, certain groups of practitioners that are training big groups of people to serve big groups of people. So you hear about ceremonies with 15, 20, 30 people in them. And, you know, I hear about ceremonies upwards of 50 and 70 people. I don't want to drop their names, but, you know, it's absolutely terrifying. And then us as integration specialists as well, we get reached out to by, you know, participants with horror stories of how it went down. You know, they're given 15 to 20 to 30 minutes kind of in their space. But at the same time, people on each side of them are going into full catharsis and full experience. No preparation, no real hands-on integration. There's someone out there, I'm not sure who it is, but there's someone selling websites to practitioners that already has all the information on it. And they're using as their, you know, practitioner website. And it even says on there in the integration side, with 5-MeO integration is different. It's not like other medicines where you have to actively integrate. You just let it happen, which is the most untrue thing I've ever heard in my life. 5-MeO process takes far more hands-on integration than any other medicine that I've seen. Furthermore, it takes all that not just to make it safe, but to make it effective, to make it not turn into an ego complex, because our egos are great at creating an identity around anything, even dissolving our egos. So it's just trying to get all that information out there right now. And it's been a big effort of trying to bring the community together, which has been like herding stray cats. It's been very difficult because, again, there's not one central lineage. And all of us practitioners who have been serving for a while, you know, we've all got our own things going on and everyone's kind of wary of what everyone else is doing. And the 5 platform is not meant to be about my company. It's not meant to be about Kaivalya Collective or Tandava. It's not meant to be about myself or my partner. It's meant to be about the community and run and led by the community. So we've been bringing in the masters of their areas, bringing in the senior practitioners who have been doing this for 10, 20 years. And, you know, there's very few groups that have been serving for more than, I'd say, 5 to 10 years. There's only a few that I can think of, but they've been doing it in a style of absolute mastery. And so bringing in their information, bringing in the people that want to be a part of this. And so the page will also have vetted practitioners who are operating in legal areas or gray areas. It will have vetted retreats, vetted practitioners, and just good information. So something that the public can look to when they are inquiring about this incredibly powerful experience. So they will not be harmed by it.
Great. No, this is, I'm so glad. I'm like, I'm sitting here, you know, it's interesting being in this realm for a while now. I always try to watch my own judgment, my own ego that's like, here's right and wrong, and here's the way I, you know, I've been very, very blessed, thank God, throughout my path to work with really high integrity people.
Yeah.
You know, all my medicine work has been with extremely high level people. So I've been blessed. Yeah, and yeah. Then that's where I'm like, oh, I didn't know that there was this whole other world until I went to an event with a whole bunch of people from Austin, and I was like, oh my God, you know,
yeah.
But again, it's,
Texas
you know,
is scary right now.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, yeah. You know, who's to say what's right or wrong or good or bad. But you know, when you do start meeting more and more people that have horror stories versus healing stories or, harm versus, you know, just safety. And we all know that this, out of all the medicines, this is actually one medicine that does have potential to be unsafe and harmful.
Yes.
And there have
yes.
been deaths way in the past, you know, from other space holders. So I'm just curious, you know, with your integration process, you know, even looking back on my one experience or even the training program I was in this year, which was only 11 of us, you know, we were first trained in many, many, many modalities of somatic therapies, trauma uh-huh. training, different forms of therapeutic trainings before. And we weren't even there to become it wasn't even a facilitator training. It was kind of like an all-encompassing mm-hmm. like life thing. But the one toad experience we had, which was over a 5-day period and, you know, three different experiences, you know, and it was held in this really profound way where it's like the integration is not a blip. The integration is diving deep into
yeah.
like these patternings and these traumas. I'm curious, like in your training or in your own integration process, like I know you mentioned the hero's journey and, you know, the Joseph Campbell work, which of course is beautiful and very important, but where do we bring in like the trauma and people who are going there, especially if you're going in for, say, treatment resistant depression or some kind yeah. of major PTSD? You know, we all know these are not light things. You know, what is mm-hmm. your integration process like based on?
Well, yeah. So, well, firstly, I would say that, you know, complex PTSD generally is not a good fit for this medicine at first. Usually when people come to us with complex PTSD, or very aggressive PTSD from combat trauma, we do not generally take them on first. We send them to resources. You know, there's plenty of people who are more fit to take care of that. And this medicine can be done very effectively, but it needs to be done in pair with Western psychotherapists who are very experienced with particular trauma. Or not even necessarily Western psychotherapists, but therapists that are very experienced in this. Professionals need to be brought in. And there is, I believe, Wounded Hearts Project is working with combat vets right now, and they're putting together a comprehensive protocol for working with that. And, you know, we would send people either their way, send them to therapists who are working with MDMA, things like that first to start to get in there, because this experience can absolutely trigger PTSD. So we're very open about that. In our integration process, our protocols are based on individual containers. So our center here in Mexico, we take up to 5 participants at any given time running their own individual concurrent retreats. Medicine sessions happen privately. Talk therapy sessions happen privately. Neural feedback and EEG and EKG brain scan stuff happens privately. But then there's group activities as well, whether it be yoga, meditation, integration circles in the evening. But the idea is to gear the container around the individual. So as I mentioned before, we spend 2 weeks doing preparation work with the participant before their arrival. And it's after all the screening and things. And this is, one, it allows us to understand what they're bringing to the table. It allows us to understand how we can best serve their individual unique process. And then speaking to that. And so their experiences here at the center will be a reflection of that. It'll be speaking directly to what's alive in their process. After their departure with us, after they leave the center, every participant who comes does at least 4 aftercare integration sessions with one of our integration specialists, and that's done remotely via Zoom. And then, of course, there's options to take that into longer containers, and we have lots of resources all over the world depending on where the participants are coming from. Some people are going to need some good somatic body work. You know, we're working with a great guy out of New York right now who's going to be teaming up with us and doing some somatic body therapy as aftercare protocols. He's going to be doing some stints down at some of our centers as well, finding out what different participants need and speaking to that. You know, we've been in this space for a long time and we're very connected in the community. And so finding different people who are masters at their craft that we can send our participants to. And making sure, you know, the idea is to make sure that they get the most out of this experience rather than it just being a peak experience that fades away after a few months and they have to come back and do it again. And that's what we want to avoid. We want them to really get some life-lasting change out of this. And so for integration, it's going to look different for every participant. As I mentioned before, you know, some people are coming to address serious mental illness or serious issues, such as treatment-resistant depression, such as trauma. Some people are more on the spiritual search. And so we have different integration specialists ranging from, you know, kind of the spiritual coach type of vibe all the way to Western psychotherapy and trauma therapy and seeing what they need. You know, as I said, some participants have no interest in the spiritual side of things. And of course, we're going to honor that. We're going to speak to them in the languages that they're comfortable with and really just help them get to where they need. And yeah, so I'd say the protocols vary from case to case, but it is specific to what's alive in them, whether it be Western therapy or the Eastern practices or anywhere in between. In addition, people can add on an additional neurofeedback plan where the headset gets mailed to their house and they keep it for 3 months. And we're able to remotely upload their protocols into their headset, track their progress, see their EEGs and brain scans, see what's going on. If they're continually going back into beta state, you know, if they're a trauma participant, or if, you know, it depends if they're trying to find quiet mind, you know, and just kind of really get into that theta state more. We have, you know, protocols for that, just different ways to get them where they need to go.
Yeah, no, it's great. And it sounds, I love this integration. You said a key term, lasting change. So yes. It's interesting for me, you know, when I did it back 5 years ago, I said, okay, why would I need to do that again? I mean, I integrated it pretty well. It was a very long integration process. I saw the change. I saw how I changed. I saw how my life changed. I saw the prayer manifest. And actually, when I came back to this program this year where we did it this summer, I actually originally was going to just turn it down. I was like, no, I don't really need it. That's why, you know, when I have been around these other groups in other parts of the U.S. and I was like, oh, I didn't know people are doing it that much. Why do you feel that people, like, why do people, other than it's an ego-driven, you know, response, but why are people feeling the need to go do something like this over and over and over and over and over when, you know, maybe they don't actually need it? Like, do we need to be doing this every few months? Like, is it one of these medicines where it's gonna take like lifelong working with it to clear the trauma?
Absolutely not. You know, I'd say one part of it would be our Western mental tendency to always be doing rather than allowing and to rather than be tapping into the subtle. It turns into a form of peak chasing because it's a peak experience. And of course there is, whether we integrate it or not, there is that, you know, initial glow afterwards. And so then if it's not integrated and drawn into the daily life, people are going to, once it wears off in a few weeks or so, people are going to be like, oh, you know, I was out of my patterns for a little while. I was feeling back to normal, but you know, it's my, you know, my old ways are coming back. I need to get back there and do it again. And so when participants, if and when participants reach out to us to come back and do another stay with us, we generally question why. We'll go through a little interview with them and see why they're looking to do it. And we don't always accept people coming back. We'll offer them further integration. We'll offer them different techniques to get deeper into it because the ego can build an identity around this and it can create a dissolution, you know, resistant strain of ego, just like antibiotics do with a virus. So it's very tricky to watch out for, you know, there's so many other issues that go into, you know, repeat use of this medicine. I would say as a practitioner, it is important to maintain a relationship with the medicine. I touch in with the medicine on, you know, I go into a full release with the medicine maybe these days, maybe twice a year. And that's so I can continue to really understand what my participants are going through because the experience is so far beyond the mind. It's really, really, you know, after you've just been serving the medicine to people for a while and haven't experienced it, you can kind of start to develop a slight memory loss as to what they're really going through. And I mean, compassion fatigue can play into this, all types of things. And so we find it important as a bit of maintenance, but it's going to be different for every practitioner. But the main thing is integrating it. I'm not going to do the medicine if I don't have the time and space to integrate it afterwards. And especially lately with the business, we've got so much stuff going on. I don't have the time to integrate it right now. So I'm not going to do a medicine session today. You know, there's exactly. Lots more integrative practices I can do.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, the one thing, it's fascinating because I got a text from a friend who is actually in this program with me, and she's like, oh, I just had a toad experience the other day. And, you know, I think the text said something like, oh, I have such gratitude and appreciation for everything. And I know her well enough to know, like, that's actually how she always is. And that's where I'm like, well, wait a second, like, this is our inherent nature, that ecstatic state of love and gratitude and oneness and wholeness. We can access it every moment, you know? Like, I've made a conscious choice, even through challenge and hell, and, I'm human like everyone else, but I've made a conscious choice to just, like, make that my path. Like, I do feel like love guides all, and I do feel connected, and I do see the beauty and wonder and reverence in most everything. You know, it's not to say there's not challenges, but to have that, to me, all these states that I've accessed over many years of, you know, whatever psychedelic states, meditational states, you know, running a marathon state, doesn't matter what it is, they all bring us to that same place, which is totally accessible with or without the medicine. And that's where...
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm like, well, isn't that one of the points, is to integrate it enough to actually see this in our every moment waking present state, you know? And then what would life be like if that was actually brought to this consciousness of everything we do, you know, the knowing of the connection, the knowing of the wholeness, the knowing of our inherent nature. And that's where I'm like, so yeah, that whole chasing the peak and chasing after this. And then, you know, you said something fascinating about, you know, like even having the peak experience, eventually you build resistance to it. Or like, you know, like with ayahuasca, I don't go to the places I used to go. I mean, sometimes, but it's a very different energy now. But it is fascinating. Now, I had a question that has come up for many years around this medicine is, you know, because of course, there's always that part of me that's like, oh, maybe if everybody on the planet had this, we would just solve all the world's problems, you know, but let's get real. It's not meant for everybody. But then it's like, there is always this question of like, why is this medicine here now during these times? Like, why is it growing in popularity? Yeah. Like, and especially, I think a lot of people are not aware that this is not like, there isn't this lineage with the toad in particular. Yes, I do believe, and I'm sure maybe on some level, this is what most people understand, is that it was, you know, like it's guided through the earth and through the plants and through the animals and through the spirits. And that's how they discovered it. But it's not that old, right? We can't trace it back to millennia. So what's your theory as to like, why is this gaining popularity and why has it become this medicine for these times?
You know, it is great question. I really believe 5-MeO is the medicine for this time. Not that everyone needs to do it at this time, but I believe that it is very significant for this day and age because it forces us to see our own patterning. You know, if we go all the way to a state of dissolution and we come back, we get to watch our minds come back bit by bit. We get to see our patterns come back. You know, it allows us that state of observation rather than only being in the point of view of the mind and the ego. It allows us that... that omnipresent awareness that the yogis would call purusha, you know, that that observer seat where we can watch the mind and see it. And we're, you know, at the same time, we're beginning to understand more and more about how trauma has affected us, even, you know, generational trauma has affected us. And 5-MeO is a trigger for catharsis. We've seen it time and time over with pretty much every participant that they'll go into some state of cathartic release, whether it be they're letting go of something recognizable or they're letting go of something that is, you know, beyond their understanding. But the whole world seems to be in a state of shedding right now. And when COVID happened in 2020, we all got put on timeout and got sent away to deal with our own shit in silence. And I thought it was one of the best things that could have happened to the world. Of course, all tragedy aside, but you know, it's the whole world needed to be put on lockdown for a little while, to be put in timeout, to see what we have brewing within us. You put anyone, you know, at home by themselves for a while, they're going to be with themselves and will have to deal with their own shite. And this medicine is a great, great tool for the falling away. You know, there's so many systems and structures that so many people put so much faith in for so long. And, you know, within a few months of COVID beginning, just watching everything crumbling away. And those who are familiar with the spiritual process or spiritual emergency, as coined by Stanislav Grof, it was a very familiar process. You know, and as above, so below, what was happening in people's internal life was also happening in the outer world. So we are in a deep state of transition right now where there's a grand falling away. And of course, that falling away can be scary. That's what spiritual awakening is. And we don't even have to use the term spiritual there. That's simply what awakening is. It is the crumbling away of the old so something new and completely unknown can emerge from it. And 5MEO is just a rocket ship's fast speed kind of quick experience of that. And I find it really goes hand in hand with what is happening. And then furthermore, it being a medicine that is without indigenous lineage or any particular lineage that can claim it. I mean, the first person to smoke toad medicine was 30 something years ago, a white guy out of Arizona. And, you know, it was, it's showing us that all of our stories can still matter, but they don't have to be the only story. It's showing that we can all operate here, understanding that all paths are going to lead to the same place if we go about them in a safe way. All paths can lead to the same place if we honor ourselves and not decide that what works for me is going to work for everyone else. Because I absolutely had the same thought. It was like, you know, years ago, I was like, everyone needs to do 5MEO. This is what can save the world. But I certainly don't think that now. I certainly think it has great healing potential in what it teaches us. But there's many tools to get there. Just like you said, there's a lot of places, a lot of techniques that can get us to that stillness. And all we need to get to that grand mystical experience is to find absolute stillness, is to quiet the chatter of the mind in order to experience what is behind it all. And 5MEO shows us that. And what's happening in the world right now, it's exciting and terrifying at the same time. But hey, it's the death process, you know, and the death process can be scary and it can also show the beauty of an open road ahead. And I'm here for it. Yeah. I dig it.
Yeah, me too. I literally just said that on the last podcast. I said, you know, and this has been my theory for a long time, but that these medicines are here to really show us how to sit in all of it, right? How to just sit in the, you know, even recently I had this, like, the center of the cyclone, like the center,
yeah.
Like being centered in the chaos where, honestly, I'm like you. Like, when 2020 hit, I was like, oh, here it is. Like, it wasn't, you know, first of all, I think many of us knew on some level something like this was coming. It was shown, you know, and it's kind of just in our nature to be like, oh, yeah. And it was just kind of a gift. I was like, oh, this will be really good for healing and breaking through some of these deep ass wounds that are running our whole entire collective, you know. And it is, you know, these medicines show us how to understand our nature, right? And like be okay with death. You know, this is another subject that's come up a lot. I've helped actually, I have a bunch of clients that are in the death world, you know, death doulas and want to start changing the whole paradigm of how we die. And then, you know, working with medicines for end of life therapies. And it's still such this taboo topic where no one's really comfortable talking about it. And it's like, well, wait a second. Like, this is actually just part of life, and it is part of the human experience. And even COVID, you know, like at the root of all of it, I'm like, what is at the root of all of this? It's like this large fear of death, and that's pretty much it. It's like there's only so much we can control as human beings. And I believe, like, especially this 5MEO, it's so just shows us that, you know, there's not much more to do other than just surrender, you know? It's like, let go of the control, be in the moment, be present, you know, sit and hold both these energies, because it's they're never going to go away. You know, that's the whole chasing the peak where I'm like, well, why is everyone just trying to feel constantly great? You know, is that the end goal? But I'm curious, you know, as a practitioner and now creating a training and being a leader in this space, where do you think the future is going when it comes to not only, you know, the BUFO, but other medicines? And then also, you know, this is the second question that we'll get into is, what about, you know, the talk? Because this has come up so much in, you know, the groups I've been in. But the discussion around the sustainability and the over-harvesting and the, you know, like everything, like grabbing more, doing. And how do we bring this into balance? Like, what does the future look like, you think?
Yeah. You know, I think that's a really important question. And, you know, the future of, especially with 5-MeO and Toad in particular, we're very, very loud on our stance about the about using synthetic. We work with synthetic pretty much strictly. You know, I served both for years and I found them to be the exact same experience. No one can tell the difference. We've had tons of participants come to us saying, like, oh, I want to go with the natural one. You know, I like to do natural things. Of course, we all like to do natural things, but if it's going to cost the toads their life, if it's going to cost, you know, if it's going to affect an entire habitat, we don't need to do that. Synthetic, as long as it's made with the right intentions, it's made in the right way, it doesn't mean it's got to be, you know, some poison, you know, thing. And so there's a lot of stigma around synthetic. So we've been really trying to get the word out there that, hey, toad is not sustainable for as popular as this medicine is getting. This medicine cannot serve the whole world. However, great quality made synthetic product can. And so we use synthetic. We also find it safer. Toad, you don't know how much you're giving someone. It can be 10% 5-MeO. It can be 30% 5-MeO. We like dosage specificity. You know, especially in the second, our second session with participants is generally multiple rounds of lower doses with specific intentions, doing specific work. If we're trying to work into a specific area and we accidentally give them a knockout dose instead, it's going to be kind of counterintuitive and going against their progress a bit. So I think we're in a teething process right now of getting to understand where our own ideologies may inhibit actual evolution, where our own ideologies and dogmas may get in the way of, you know, what this medicine really needs to do. And so it's really up to us as practitioners to take that into consideration and to lead by example. That's been a big thing of ours. I'm not against toad at all. I love toad medicine. And but I think it's, I feel it's exactly the same as synthetic. I have a lot of respect for the toads. I feel that the toads are giving us a message that, hey, they're underground for 9 months in perfect darkness. 9 months, very significant time, of course, with birthing. But also, if we go into perfect darkness, we go into pitch blackness around day 5 or 6, the pineal gland will begin to excrete pinealine, which can then in turn activate and trigger NN-DMT and 5-MeO-DMT, causing an endogenous experience. It's showing us that we are the medicine, that we do not need a substance necessarily. And like I mentioned, I had my first experience like this without any medicine, living in an ashram in India. And I believe that's a very important lesson for us humans to digest. And so the future of this, you know, medicines and psychedelics are going into the business space. Big business has made its way in, and big pharma has made its way in. And I really feel it's pertinent for us practitioners and those of us who have been in the space for a while and understand the process to get a very loud voice, not to reject the fact that business is coming in, but to understand, hey, business is coming in, so let's do this right. Business does not have to mean extractive economics. Business does not have to be, you know, stealing from cultures and completely taking out the essence. Business done right can be a wonderful thing and can would be change and can change the world. And I've really found a deep passion in entrepreneurship over the past 2 years, which has been really, really fun and way more interesting than I ever thought it would be. But you know, the future of this medicine fully depends on how it gets handled now. Public perception is of extreme importance right now, and that's another cause behind why we're launching Five, so we don't get more headlines such as Italian porn star kills friend with toad venom and things like that.
Oh God, help us all. Yeah, no, and you said
Yeah.
one important thing that I you know, is interesting. This summer when I worked with it again, we had specific intentions and we were actually doing these somatic modalities and actually the lower dosage was actually, it was the same thing you just said. It was like so much more effective, meaning
Yeah.
we were
Yeah.
able to bring consciousness. Like I actually, it was the first time where, you know, out of the 3 times I did it, I actually had my eyes open, like wide open for I think 2 of them. And I was able to actually just so engage the observer to be able to understand, like, oh, which, you know, in a full release type dose, or even sometimes with ayahuasca or even psilocybin, you get into that kind of, you know, wonky state sometimes where you're like, or too much is coming through and then you can't remember it or whatever it is. But to be very conscious and have intention and work with practitioners and know what they're doing and really bring it into like understanding, okay, what is it I'm here for? Like, what is the patterning that's driving me and how can I actually make lasting change? And I love what you just said about, oh yeah, please, no more of these crazy headlines and to really, you know, accept the world that we're in, which, yes, there is this reality of businesses here, psychedelics are growing, they're not going backwards. We're only, it's only going to grow in popularity and seeking and healing, especially with these times that we're in. And now it's more about, like you said, like, how do we create the right resources and the right training to do this safely and effectively so that we can actually create real lasting change and integrate it properly to then, you know, make a larger scale effect on the planet. You know, that's what this whole podcast was all about, and all the summits I do is really, how are these medicines here to actually help us, you know, in the collective, you know, like you said, as above, so below. It's like, what's within? It's also, you know, what are we doing on a larger scale? What are we doing with the earth, with each other, with community, with, you know, humanity, and where, what direction are we all going in? So Joel, I'm so glad you're doing this incredible work. Now we only have a few more minutes left, so I want to leave space. Tell people, like, what do you have coming up? I know you mentioned, you know, the Five, which, by the way, is a nonprofit, right?
It's not a revenue focused project. We were looking at doing it as a nonprofit, but because it's linked to a for-profit company, it was going to cause all types of issues and red tape. And, so we're making it, it's not going to be a revenue centered project. Revenue that does come in, you know, we take a percentage on what goes through integration specialists and things like that. And that's going to be going to supporting toad conservation projects, as well as communities in Sonora, the Yaqui tribe, the Seri tribe, anywhere where we can get it that's been impacted communities. I really feel that toad medicine should be left for the indigenous right now. I really feel that this can be their medicine, and it's an amazing tool for healing in such a hurt part of the world. And it's just not sustainable to be taking care of everyone else. So I would love just to see more kind of loving energy going into that space and good things like that. Yeah.
Nice.
And then as far as what else is happening, you know, we have our center here in Tepoztlan, Mexico, and that can be found at tandavaretreats.com. We have a second center opening up in March. It's happening so bloody soon. In Costa Rica, which is a very large project. We're teamed up with Hive, which is a clinical psychedelic company out of Malta. And we'll be medically licensed there. We'll be doing DNA biopanels, IV drips, all types of fun stuff like that. We'll be working with addiction interruption, medication interruption. It won't be just geared on 5-MeO. We'll do our regular 5-MeO protocols we do here over there. But we're also going to have an ayahuasca program that's going to be geared around highlighting specific tribes and giving back to the tribes. So that also won't be very revenue focused. There'll be a big give back initiative there. We'll also have different types of wellness retreats, you know, Wim Hof style breathwork retreats, things like that. And that one's going to be a slightly more high-end, luxurious center. It's going to be pretty amazing. And, you know, we've got float tanks coming in here, probably about 2 months. We'll have a float center at the Costa Rica property as well. And just lots of yummy goodness. We're going to have a restaurant in Costa Rica as well. That'll be open to the public in Costa Rica, and a non-alcoholic adaptogenic cocktail bar and fun things such as that. And then we have our, we have our group retreats in Jamaica as well. Where we'll be probably getting back into around June. We'll see what's happening with COVID around there. And we do not have a physical location in Jamaica, but we've got a few venues that we work out of there. And then we have the Five platform, which is launching in the next 2 months. We'll be launching the practitioner refinement course in about 3 months. And the practitioner refinement course is for existing practitioners who have done some of these not so comprehensive trainings, these short trainings, and, you know, are in need of stronger tools so they can better give their participants a great experience. We'll also have our year-long comprehensive training program out of there, and then lots of other juice from there. And then we also have our other subsidiary, which is Kyvalia Integral, where we've got, it's a consulting and advising firm where we're working with newer companies and publicly traded companies that are stepping into the space that may not be so experienced with psychedelics, as we're seeing a lot of them coming in. So we're working custom protocols for some companies and using our resources, our integration specialists and things like this. You'd be surprised what we're seeing, you know, come out right now. There's one company that we were speaking to, and they're a telemed ketamine company getting ready to IPO. And they're trying to use a Filipino call center as integration specialists. You know, things like this. This is what we're dealing with. And so this is why I feel it's so important that those people who are qualified and understand this medicine get loud and learn business real quick, because it's a There's a very clear agenda from that side to discredit the underground and to discredit the non-specifically clinical side of psychedelic use. And both sides are welcome, but we can't negate one side. And so, yeah, it's going to be interesting how things roll out over the next few years.
Yeah, both sides are welcome, and it's a reality. It's going to stay. And yes, I agree. Yeah. I actually have some clients who are in this realm. Actually, you probably know some of them doing, you know, psychedelic integration work, some working for some of these ketamine companies. And it is, it's been interesting to get a back end, you know, like view of what's really happening. And it is kind of like, well, wait a second. The voice does need to be heard, especially when it comes to sacred reciprocity, giving back, you know, sustainability, proper training, proper integration. It's not just like, okay, let's go set up a company and make money. Yes, that's a part of our system. It is, you know, I don't think we're going to be able to stop it, but it is a very important time to have the voices and the leaders and just everybody really speaking up. And if, you know, if there's something you don't agree with, or if there's something you want to see a company implement, you have to say something. It's the only where we're going to get this done right without having it to become some other disaster, like, you know, other industries we've seen develop over the years. So Joelle, it was such an honor to have you here. Thank you so much for sharing your voice and this work that you're doing. And we'll have the links to all that you're offering and all that you're putting out there. And, you know, when this project launches, I'll definitely help share it and get the word out. This is incredible work. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Awesome.
We'll have another interview next week on Tuesday on the Psychedelic Entrepreneur Medicine for These Times, and we'll see you then. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you're feeling inspired, I'd appreciate it if you showed your love with a review. And check out my YouTube channel where you can find the video version of this podcast. You can also head to bethaweinstein.com to learn more about me and grab my free business growth trainings. Remember, you carry your own unique medicine, and your medicine is what we need for these times.